Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Wow, Itamar was interesting, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The fact that he's been creating content since he was 9 years old is just incredible. Mm-hmm. What did you find most impactful?
I found the fact that he's in a niche, inside a niche that he said, and that the fact that in the world of digital, he still has a network of people and it's very much based around human activity and human connections.
Definitely.
I found that very interesting.
Yeah, the human side really comes through. Let's let our audience dive in and learn all about Itamar.
Hi, I'm Itamar and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. My co-host today is the fantastic Nathan. Nathan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm a student. I study psychology, media and business.
Fantastic. Well, we're looking forward to having you on the podcast today. And then our fantastic guest today is the wonderful Itamar. Itamar, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Itamar. I'm the senior SEO director at Studio Hawk, which is an SEO agency. And for my entire professional career, I've just done SEO. So happy to be here today and talk to you guys.
Fantastic. Well, over to you, Nathan, for the first question.
Well, actually, what is an SEO?
That's a good question. I think the way that I would describe, and obviously this is coming from somebody who does SEO day in, day out. So obviously I appreciate that from an outsider's perspective, some people might not really truly know, which I guess that's why it is a good question, right? So the way that I describe it, an SEO is somebody who essentially optimizes things on the internet. So when I say things, I mean, most people will think of websites. So businesses have a website. They have that website because they want people to find them. And usually when people are going to be making searches on search engines like Google, for example, they're going to be looking for things. And as an SEO, what the job is, you're a search engine optimizer, I guess, right? So you're essentially doing things within those website or those online entities and assets to get people to find them when they search. And I guess nowadays we're in quite an interesting time because it's not just traditional search engines people are using to find things. You've got all sorts of other tools at your disposal, all sorts of platforms, whether that's more traditional ones like social media and you have search capabilities within there, but also with AI and people are searching for things using AI tools as well. So the term SEO really, it's got, you know, it's been around for 20 plus years at this point and it sort of started from more traditional search engines, even before Google was a thing. But now we're sort of seeing things develop a lot. But I still think the term SEO is still relevant in terms of what it is that we do.
Amazing.
So how do you keep up with the changing trends and algorithms?
Yeah, so I think with trends, you have to just sort of be on the pulse and just see what's going on in the industry. You have to be following certain types of accounts, whether that's more official sources from Google, for example, or just following on LinkedIn and seeing what people are posting. So for me personally, I'm connected with loads of people within digital marketing, and a lot of them are posting all the time of developments that's happening, things that they found. That's usually the best way to stay updated. There's loads of different types of media outlets specifically for digital marketing or in the online sphere. But yeah, I would say in terms of keeping up with algorithms, I mean, every platform's got its own algorithm, right? Google has its own algorithm, which is different to Bing, but they're both search engines, mm-hmm. right? They work not in the exact same way. So when it comes to keeping up with algorithms, I think it's more just to experiment and do testing to sort of take what you understand from documentation that's been provided. So Google, for example, has lots of documentation around its search engine and what it does. There's loads of different research papers that you can sort of dig back and read into. But in terms of keeping up to it and trying to test the algorithm, really is to take what you've read and know and experiment with it. Create a website, try some things out, and sort of see if it matches with what it is that you've been sort of looking at. Because things change all the time.
Yeah.
Algorithms constantly change. So it's like, it's not like to say, oh, I understand this and therefore I'm set for the rest of my life. It doesn't work that way, right? Things are always adapting.
What kind of skills do you use as an SEO?
Wow.
That's a, I know, I've just opened Pandora's box, I know.
I think with SEO, in terms of, it's really interesting in terms of what skills you need, because I instinctively think soft skills instead of hard skills. I think to be a good SEO, I think you need soft skills that more align towards things like curiosity, creativity. It's a mentality of like being willing to want to explore things further and test and try new things, and always kind of finding the joy in something that changes so frequently. Mm. And sort of not getting caught up into like I said before, like, oh, I know this to be true, and therefore I'm going to set my sort of mental model on that and never change my sort of approach and things like that. I think really the skills lend itself greater on the soft side to sort of have that willingness to be testing, experimenting, and because, you know, everything is changing. In the digital world, things change all the time.
Yep.
And you know, we used to say that 5-10 years ago, but nowadays things are literally changing all the time. New types of software, things come out, platforms, every single day it seems like. And sort of you need to be able to have that curiosity to want to keep sort of digging every single day and learn something new.
Definitely. And it's not even just the platforms changing. Us humans are changing in how we do things because of other platforms coming to our disposal. So actually, that's another interesting part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, like now it's the most exciting time to be, well, I want to say a human, to be honest, like humanity generally with the type of tech and the resources at our disposal. And we also take this for granted. A lot of them are free to use as well, or have some kind of like the accessibility to incredible types of technology is something that we've never seen before as the human race. And I think it's like, what a time to be alive and to be in digital marketing, honestly.
Yeah. We take it for granted just what we even have in our pockets on our phones. Like, we're so used to it and we're all lost without it. I mean, being in London today here at the Drum, like, it's so easy to get around because you've got Google Maps. Imagine back in the day when you didn't have. It's, yeah, we do take it for granted, don't we?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I everything digital, that's sort of like what I'm used to. And going back to analog stuff, like, no one even thinks about it. It's like we could not go back to that, I wouldn't think.
No, we'd really struggle. Nah. Or I know I would.
So what does your average day at Studio Hawk look like?
That's a good question. It really does change a lot in terms of the sort of stuff that I do. So, you know, for us, obviously we're an agency, we have clients. So the number one is always in terms of working on client accounts. So they've got websites, we're optimizing their stuff, we're having calls with them, catch-ups, setting strategies. Other stuff that I'm doing, so I do occasionally talk at different conferences. So sometimes I go around, sometimes it's in the UK, sometimes it's abroad. And also part of my role also is BD. So being involved within the sort of pitching processes, creating proposals, trying to win new business. So for me personally, it's kind of like there's a few different plates that are being spun. So the average day, it kind of usually is a variation of sort of these different things at the core, but each day can be different in terms of the weighing. If I'm doing, you know, more types of proposals, or I've got more calls on one day, for example. So it does vary, which is also why I kind of enjoy it. It's like each day is different and it kind of keeps things fresh. And I think that's just how it is in the agency world, at least. Like, there's always things to do. There's always things happening.
Mm. What's your favorite part?
Favorite part? I mean, to be honest, like I enjoy the community aspect of SEO and part of what I do, like knowing so many people in the industry, and I'm really fortunate to know a lot of great people and be able to either go to events and sort of see friends. Like, usually if I go to some kind of conference or an event, whether I'm attending or whether I'm speaking, I'll always kind of know people there. So it is like being an SEO, a lot of it is community, like a lot of, you know, people who like to sort of get together. And I find that with SEO, it's quite a special thing. Like, even people that I know who are in other agencies, right? So technically it's like, oh, we're competitors. But the reality is, like, there's plenty of work to go around. And it's more about the actual relationships that you can create and that, you know, to foster those kind of connectivity with other people who enjoy doing the same things that you enjoy. So, yeah.
It's pretty special, actually, isn't it? And even other digital disciplines don't seem to have the same community that we have in the SEO world, which is interesting, isn't it? I don't know what's created it, but I'm really glad it did.
No, I think it's a very good point. I say this to people all the time. I feel like within SEO, it's quite unique, because in what other industry would something like this happen? And I think maybe it's more to do with just the vast majority of people that I've come across in the industry. They all sort of have like the common denominator of just like, being genuinely nice people who would rather, you know, lend a hand and help people out as opposed to want to watch others fail, if that makes sense, which may happen in a lot of other types of industries, whether that's in digital or outside of digital.
Yeah. And I guess the other common thread is that everyone that works in SEO is under the pressure of the platforms change all the time. They don't necessarily tell you what's changed from an algorithmic perspective, therefore what's different to your job. Like if you work in paid, at least you would know what changes have happened and therefore there's new types of campaign or whatever. In SEO, it's a bit of a mystery, isn't it? That we're all working out together. And actually the more we share and help and support each other, the better for everybody to be stronger and better at their jobs. So maybe that's part of it.
No, I think that's a big part of it, because it's like, you know, when you think of other things, like you say, paid is a great example, because certain new things come out, new sort of ways of doing things, and everyone's kind of following the same kind of guidelines to a T, because it's all sort of set. They can play around with it. Everyone knows what they're doing. With SEO, it's a lot of it is sort of mystery. It's like you're never going to know what's in the black box of the Google algorithm. So people are kind of, you know, asking each other like, hey, what has worked for you in this type of niche? And they kind of, this is where discussions sort of happen. This is why SEO events happen. And there's loads of SEO events. And you think SEO is like one little thing. It's a niche within digital marketing, which in itself is a niche within marketing as a whole. So it's like we're this tiny sort of speck as part of the marketing sphere. But there's so many events, so many sort of meetups, masterminds. People love getting together to discuss because everyone sort of wants to. So it's like a massive puzzle. You know, SEOs are puzzle problem solvers, right? So yeah, that connectivity part, I think, is where that stems from that mystery of, you know, we want to work this out together.
Definitely. And not just events, there's also podcasts. You run a podcast, don't you, on SEO?
I do.
Give it a plug.
So I've got a podcast. It's called SEO Unplugged. And pretty much the concept is I bring in people I know from the industry. Sometimes they're people who are agency side or freelancers or work in in-house brands. Pretty much just either picking their brain or getting an understanding of one particular topic that they really enjoy, and just to get sort of real world experiences from their perspective to help teach some people maybe something new. So usually I try and upload once a month, and yeah, it's not, you know, it's not set up nearly as well as this, I will say. But, you know, it is fun. It's something I enjoy doing.
It's great though, isn't it? We're so lucky in the day and age we live in, the amount of content that is at our fingertips and people like yourself just creating great content, that in another time, you'd have paid a lot of money to be able to get access to this kind of information. And yet it's freely available. It's there on YouTube. It's on Spotify. It's wherever you can find it. And you can just digest it and learn. So actually, for anyone that listens today that's inspired to think about SEO, that's going to be a great resource to go and understand what goes on in the industry.
Yeah, I would say
We're at a very lucky time.
Yeah. What would you say? You said you've been at SEO for quite a while. How did you actually get to be SEO?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, indirectly, when I was growing up, I was really big into computers, and I was really big into creating things and trying to sort of sell things. And as I was sort of growing up, this would have been 2008, where YouTube was relatively new. That was sort of the first type of platform that I really wanted to get stuck in and experiment with. And at the time, I mean, like I think I was 9 years old at the time. And I was just creating content. I was just, you know, I taught myself video editing, photo editing, with different tools. I just wanted to create things. And then when I created things, I'm like, well, I don't have any money. So I'm like, I need to find a way for people to reach what I'm creating, because I'm not going to be able to spend money just promoting it with ads. So that's essentially sort of how I started understanding more about video marketing, and also what it means to optimize things. How do you sort of take what type of demand there is out there from people looking for your stuff, and how do you actually get it found? And obviously YouTube is where I sort of started that with. It's still the second biggest search engine in the world, right, behind Google. And obviously the sort of platform works quite differently in terms of how you optimize stuff, and YouTube as a platform has evolved a lot over the years. It's very different to what it was when I started, but then over the years I sort of realized it makes a lot more sense to try and do what I was doing, but more for websites. It just made more sense, because I always like to think ahead. I'm like, okay, what will be helpful for me to do in the next 5-10 years? And sort of that's when relatively soon after, I started the video marketing side, and I had loads of different types of content, you know, tech, gaming, sport, all sorts of different things. And then it got to the point where I was like, I want to sort of pivot more to businesses and websites, and I sort of saw that as being where the majority of the opportunities would come from. Not to say that video marketing and optimizing stuff for videos is not important, but I just sort of saw the sort of business aspect as more, I guess, sustainable.
Okay, so did you go to uni for that?
So I went to uni, but to be honest, I knew what I wanted to do before I went to university. I went to university because at the time I sort of saw it was the you know, the thing that people did. It's sort of just part of growing up, going to school, finishing school, like A-levels, going to university. And within that, I mean, it was great. As part of my university, we had a placement year as well, which was really nice because I got more involved with, it was a full service sort of digital marketing agency. So I got to sort of try tap into different kind of areas within digital, even though I kind of knew like I want to do SEO, but it was still good to be involved in that sort of environment. And, you know, as an adult and actually really experiencing that where I'm not just sort of a kid just doing this at home, but actually sort of putting myself into the real world adult business corporate environment. But university was, you know, I still enjoyed my time there. I can't really say with digital, I learned too much. It's really tricky also for universities when it comes to digital marketing because things change so much, but universities take sometimes years to update curriculum. So that's where it's like to learn really up-to-date stuff, it's quite tricky, but there's still always going to be extracurricular stuff that you can do. So, you know, I don't regret that decision to go to university one bit for sure.
So what would you say is the best route to becoming an SEO?
The best route, and I think this applies for anything to do with any kind of digital thing you want to do, is just go online and look. Like if you've got something you are interested in, there will be resources out there for you to be able to learn that. I think most of the learning and practical things you can do come at sort of you being proactive enough to try and test things and try things out. I think that's the best thing to do. I think it's more important than a degree, in my opinion. I think being able to showcase how you are able to take initiative to go and try something, create a website, create a blog, create a TikTok account, do whatever you want to do, and actually have that experience and say, look, I did this, because that sets you apart from the vast majority of people out there. And I think that's something really valuable. Mm.
And you can start to actually apply more thought to it commercially, like if it's something you want to start getting paid for, even if it's at a small scale, if it's like a little side hustle, the more understanding you've got of that is just helpful to then be able to see how that might work in a business context in a larger organization to help you see what your role to play is. Because I think that's, again, it helps you be successful, I'm sure, with the fact that you're part of pitching and that side of the business. Now you have to understand commercially how the business works to be successful in your role. So really interesting.
Aspiration Digital is the one-day careers conference to help young people get started in the digital industry. We are just planning our next events and we are planning to move around the UK. So this is your opportunity. If you follow the link in the show notes, you can suggest that we come to your local area and get your school listed on the waitlist. Follow the link now and pop your details in. We hope to see you at a future event.
What's the most challenging part trying to keep up with a dynamic market?
I think the most challenging part is trying to, I guess, know where to prioritize your time, because there's so many things going on in the world all the time in the digital sphere. There's so many things that change. There's so many things you could do. Like there's so many things I want to do, but I don't have the time to do all of them. And obviously like with developments in AI and stuff, I've kind of use that as a way to help improve certain processes or be more efficient. But even with those, I mean, you know, everyone's got still the same 24 hours in the day. It's how you use that time and prioritize based on what it is that you want to do. I guess that's really the most challenging things, because there's so many things that I would love to do that I may get around to it eventually, but it takes a long time because there's so many other things that I need to do with a bigger priority. So the biggest challenge is really being able to set those priorities, because it's very easy to get sidetracked, very easy to get distracted, especially with the things that we're talking about, with so many things happening right now, that it's like you need to still keep focused. You know, there's so many shiny things that you can sort of latch onto, but really keeping that focused and focusing on what matters is the most challenging thing, I would say.
You've spoken about personal brand before, and obviously you mentioned you get on stage and go and speak. Tell us a bit about that journey and Because I know for a lot of people, the thought of getting on stage and speaking is a scary thing to do. So yeah, I'd love to understand more about that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that is very true across the board. I think for me, starting off my sort of digital career with video specifically meant that I had to teach myself how to talk in front of a camera. And I mean, I've been doing that stuff really since I was like 9 or 10 years old.
Wow.
And it kind of, and it's not to say that I talk like this as I did back then. You know, my voice was a lot higher pitched and I would, you know, use filler words all the time. It's something that I've had to really just practice over and over again. And I don't really think there was any particular kind of, I guess, resources that I used to try and figure out how to improve at that. I think it just comes with practice naturally. So I got quite comfortable being in front of a camera and speaking. And that sort of led to when I was, say, at university, for example, with certain types of extracurricular activities, if I'd had to go and present something, like I would be confident in doing that in front of people. So it's not just in front of a, you know, camera at home, it's actually in front of people in an audience. And there might have been 5 people, then it may have been 10, another time 50. And, you know, I've done, as of now, like I've talked in stages where hundreds of people are sort of sitting there in front of me, but that doesn't, like, my feeling never sort of changes. It's I kind of have gotten to the point where whether it's 1 person, 1,000 people, 10,000, I don't really care. Like, it's all the same to me. It's more just like the way that I approach it is like there's something that I really want to talk about. I'm really interested in. I think it would add value to at least 1 person who's listening, and sort of that's the approach I take. But sort of that journey really started from the experience I had when I was younger, really being able to be comfortable in front of a camera or speaking just generally. I think that was a really sort of nice sort of many years of practice of that I had initially.
And I guess you've had to get comfortable listening to yourself back, because most people, that's one of the barriers, isn't it? Especially for camera and film or voice. You're like, I don't want to hear my own voice. I still find it a bit cringy for myself. But yeah, I guess, it, and especially if you're editing your own work, because that's the best way to realize that you're using filler words or you're maybe not enunciating as best you could. But it was that part of the journey for you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, like I don't think anyone is born as being like a fantastic speaker.
No.
You know, that's just... You know, we're humans, like it's all about development. It's like you're not born and all of a sudden you're able to run, right? It's like it's stages. So I think for me, that was pretty much what you're saying, is like having recordings and being able to listen back and be like, okay, did I get to the point? Was I using filler words? And of course, I would sort of be doing, I used to do a lot more editing back in the day than I do now, because now I've sort of become used to how I articulate my thoughts and communicating in general. But when I was starting out, it was very difficult. I would be sort of clipping up clips all the time, removing the ums, the uhs, all of that sort of stuff. But now it's become a lot easier for me over time, I would say.
Definitely. And alongside that, you've done work around your personal brand, am I right in thinking? Was that a focus for you?
Yeah, that was a big focus, sort of growing up more towards, I guess, back end of like when I was going to university, where it's like I think it was Twitter. That was sort of like the first channel that I sort of used to really put myself out there with my name. So like, whereas before when I was younger, I would have, you know, anonymous type of names for different channels and whatnot, or assets I'd create online, whether that's blogs, sites, videos, whatever it may be. But it got to the point where I was like, okay, I want to set a name for myself. I want people to know who I am as a person. And I've sort of had that set initially. I was like, hey, I'm going, you know, I'm a digital marketer. I want to be known as that. When I sort of started pivoting specifically to SEO, I wanted to be known for that. So Twitter at the time was the channel that I used primarily for that. And a lot of that involved kind of going into different communities. And like a good example would be Semrush. So Semrush is a digital marketing tool. And they used to have these Semrush chats every Wednesday, where they would have some expert who would sort of talk about a topic. There would be questions that were asked, and I would always engage with them. I would always be answering questions, replying to people, and I used that as initially a way to get my name out there, because when you do that consistently over time, people can sort of expect it. You're sort of top of mind. They're like, I recognize this profile picture. I recognize this name. And over time, that was sort of like the first springboard I had into getting my name out there more. And sort of how that developed was, then I was sort of reaching out to people who were very well known in the industry and sort of having discussions with them and tapping into their circles. And for me, that was really a pivotal moment, because a lot of conversations I've had have helped me save maybe 4 or 5 years of mistakes had I not spoken to these people and learnt about what mistakes they've made in their career paths and their journeys. So I would say it all really stemmed from trying to be proactive on social media and really put myself into these conversations. I wasn't creating that much content when I started, but it was more just engaging, get the name out. And then when people sort of can know that you know what you're talking about, then you can create more and sort of be more known as a thought leader and all that sort of stuff. So it was sort of a journey, but there were loads of sort of pivotal moments within that that really helped to springboard to the next kind of step. And it helped me save a lot of time of trial and error had I sort of not done some of those things.
Love that. Love that.
I was actually going to ask, how is AI incorporated into your role as an SEO?
That's a good question. I mean, as of when we're recording this, I think AI is a productivity tool more than it is an SEO tool, if that makes sense. I think the way that I try to use AI is particular types of workflows where I know I can save time and I know that I'm able to prompt and be able to sort of generate instructions that won't be likely to be incorrect as just a way for me to save 5 minutes here, 20 minutes here. That's sort of how I'm using it at the moment. But obviously, because AI is getting smarter, LLM's getting smarter, you've got RAGs, you've got all of these different technologies that are becoming more and more advanced pretty much every day, then that's something that we'll see into the future, really how that may change particular types of functions of what I do day to day. But at this moment in time, it's more for the productivity aspect of just being a bit more efficient and saving myself time if I can. Mm.
And you said you was making content. What type of content was you making at the start?
For the YouTube stuff, yeah. In the beginning? Oh, that was all sorts. That was like sport, tech, gaming, music, literally anything. I was under the impression that it's just like, I just want to try a bunch of different things and see what works well. And then from everything that you do, even if it bombs and it does terribly, you still learn stuff. So for me, it wasn't so much about, I want to be famous, because that was never the intention. The intention was, I'm really interested in creating things and getting people to find things. And I'm just going to try and do that in different verticals or things that I'm interested in and then seeing how they do. Some of them did really well. I've had like certain channels that have had millions of views, tons of subscribers back in the day when it was quite difficult to get lots of subscribers on YouTube, right? And then just sort of seeing how that developed. And over time, I sort of, again, had to prioritize. So I'm like, okay, well, I can't do this forever because that's not really what I want to do. Mm-hmm. But it was a great way to sort of practice and try new things.
Love that. Love that. If thinking back across your career, is there a day or a time period that stands out as this was the best of times? Like, and what was it about that time that really, was it the results you were generating? Was it what you were learning? What stands out?
That's a really good question. I think that because there really has been just so many moments where I felt just really fortunate to have had those moments. I think things that I can remember more vividly was things just speaking with people in the industry, like having actual one-to-one calls with them to really sort of pick their brains and learn some stuff. So look, a great example I can think of is when I spoke to a friend in the industry, and at the time, it was more when I was trying to go deeper into the personal branding stuff. So I'd started with Twitter. The next sort of step really for me would have been to create a website with my name and own that. And I was speaking to this friend and they were asking me, oh, so like do you own itamarblau.com as a domain? And I was like, oh, no, I don't. I should probably do that. And they were like, too late. I've already got it. So they basically bought my domain name and they sort of, that was like one thing I always remember because that was really like the wake up call in terms of like owning your digital assets. And they could have, you know, been real mean about it and tried to sell it back to me for a lot of money, right, and stuff. But thankfully, they sort of transferred after the initial sort of grace period where you have to wait like 60 days or so. So that to me is sort of like a lesson, something that sticks out that I'll always remember. It's just like the importance of digital assets and owning your digital assets. So whether that's a username across social media platforms, whether that's your email, your domain name, that's something that really sticks out, which was a great lesson in the grand scheme of things. So.
Definitely. Is that now live and kicking as a website?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's it's been a long time. That's been up for a while. Yeah.
Love that. What's the most exciting talk you feel like you've delivered on stage? What's the one where you go, that was the moment?
That's a good question. I mean, With talks, I don't do the same talk twice.
Okay, cool.
And that's mainly because I don't want to hear myself say the same thing twice. So in terms of, I mean, they're all great. Like I don't think it matters even the some where there was a few dozen people, some where there were hundreds. Like it's, I don't know. I like talking about things that I enjoy, things that I think are valuable. So every talk that I've done really kind of stands out because it was a great experience for what it was. I can't really think of like one particular one that was great. I think the first time I spoke at Brighton SEO was when, after doing the talk straight away, I was like, as soon as I got off stage, I was like, I want to do that again. Like right now, I want to go up again and just do another talk, whatever. And that was the one, funnily enough, where Becky, we spoke about sort of the talk and structure. So I guess that was, you know, the talk where as soon as that was over, I wanted to do more and more and sort of branch out. Yeah, got the bug.
It is addictive though, isn't it? If you enjoy it. I think I always say to people when it's their first big talk, I'm like, this will be the start of a pathway or the end of a pathway. It'll either be, okay, I've done it and I can tick it. It's off the bucket list, or, oh, what's next? And what's next dangerous? Then you're off pitching, and because it's not easy to get to talk on stages, is it? You've got to have something to say.
Oh, 100%. And I think this is also where, for me, it's always a bit more challenging because I don't redo my deck. So it's always like having to come up with something new that fits in with the sort of agenda that they have on the day. And also in terms of taking the time to create a new deck as well. So that, yeah, it's not easy for sure. And sometimes you need to have an in sometimes. Like you need to know like people. And this is where the networking part is so important. And personal branding sort of fits in with that because, you know, without that, I probably wouldn't have had nearly as many opportunities as I have done so far in my career if I sort of didn't put myself into and try and get into those circles and really network heavily with the community.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess knowing SEO as I do, there's different strands to SEO, aren't there? We've got more creative people in SEO, but also more technical people. I wonder if you can unpack that a little bit and where you think you fit. Where's your skill set lie?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's sort of changed over the years. When I kind of started, I was less sort of, I had the assumption that technical SEO was more just like being a developer and, you know, doing some code here and there. And I'm like, that's not really what I enjoyed at the time. I didn't see myself as like a developer. So naturally, I was more focused on the more creative side, content, strategies, backlink acquisition, things that are like, how can I really sort of do things on pages and offsite to improve a website's rankings. But over the years, I've sort of had to understand that, you know, if I'm limiting myself, that's not a good thing. So for just the sustainability of my skill set, I needed to get up to scratch with all sorts of other areas like technical SEO. And the way that I describe myself now is really just across the board. Like, because SEO is something I do every single day. Like, even on the weekends, I'm still sort of, it sounds so sad, but I do love SEO to a point where it's like, I do keep up with what's happening.
Yeah.
And I do find it a bit tricky to sort of like, I guess, put it aside, like on the weekends and stuff. And that's more just because I really enjoy it and I'm curious about it and something that's just so ingrained into my life at this point in time. But over time, I've just had to basically try and make sure that my knowledge and understanding of how things in theory and in practice work across the board. So whether that's technical, content, off page, even things like digital PR, understanding how that works and strategies with that. So pretty much across the board. And it sounds really, I don't know how it sounds, but yeah, I didn't want to put myself in a bucket because, you know, SEO, again, like I said before, it's a niche within a niche within a niche. I didn't want to put myself into one particular niche, in a niche, in a niche, in a niche, if that makes sense, right? Because then I'm sort of, you know, trying to future-proof, I guess. So.
I've got those dolls in my head, you know, the ones that fit inside each other. And I'm you're going to be tiny at the bottom of that. But in your role as an SEO director, I see two paths that happen within being an SEO director, and it's different in different businesses. So sometimes that means you're more the strategist on client campaigns, but sometimes that's more the leadership of the team, or sometimes it's a bit of both. Where does your role sit? Are you leading the team, or are you more focused on the client work? What does that look like?
It really is a mix. It really is a mix. And that's also why, like, I find it quite exciting and fun, because there may be days where I'm, say, running a workshop or doing some training or helping team members out with strategy and trying to improve their knowledge and sort of empower them with more things that I've learned and all these sorts of things. And other times it's sort of just doing the other aspects of if I'm on calls with clients and all these sorts of things, which it's like all encompassing, which is what I really enjoy about it, because it's not like I'm doing one thing and one thing only, and then I might get a bit bored of that, I want some change. But I feel like there's always so many things happening all at once, and it's kind of like every day is just quite exciting because there's just different things that you're doing. So
yeah, how do you find the team leadership side of things? Is that something you really enjoy, and has there been any kind of pivotal moments in that journey? Because managing people isn't always the easiest.
No, not at all. But I think the way that I am, like, I'm very blunt with people, and I sort of say that off the offset. So it's kind of like, for me, I try and make sure that they're sort of comfortable with how, like, my personality, how I am, and that everything I do is just to try and help make them better than me, like give them more knowledge so that they can be a better SEO than I am, or just so that they can help propel themselves and like empower them, give them more sort of a feeling of like they've got this, and that kind of inspiration side of thing. That's also something that I care a lot about. So yeah, I'm, you know, I don't have any problems with. And thankfully, we've got a great team as well. Like, that's, which is really difficult, you know, like to have a team like of really great people that you like to work with and also are incredibly smart and talented at what they do. Like, that's quite difficult to come across, really. So, I mean, yeah, like, fortunately, so far, it's been really nice. Like, I haven't had many sort of challenges with those things.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah. If you could go back and restart, would you do anything differently?
No, because I think even days that weren't great, or times where like you've had to learn something because you messed up or whatever it is, that's still really valuable to sort of have. Like, I, something that I'm, that I always try and sort of say to myself is like, I don't regret anything I've done, because I would have probably come out differently, and I wouldn't want that. Like, I really enjoy, like, you know, I'm really thankful for like where I'm at, who I am as a person. So I really don't regret, you know, any decision, whether that's good or bad, that I've had.
How do you find managing the client side of things? Because I guess that's a big part in agency world. And we know clients can have different expectations. And yeah, how's that journey been? And any kind of advice on what kind of skills you think you need to be able to handle clients?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because nowadays, as of the time that we're recording this, you know, the economy is not in a fantastic place, and businesses are very hesitant in terms of spend and all sorts of things. And, you know, you might have incredible results for clients, but sometimes that's still not enough. So in terms of the skills really of like the managing clients aspect, you need to be empathetic, and you need to be able to sort of listen and sort of relay back things that they tell you, so that they understand that you kind of read the situation as sort of they present it. But something else you really need is you really need to back yourself in. And, you know, they hire you because you're an expert. So it's like, I can give you the recommendations. You don't have to follow them. That's on you, right? But at the end of the day, you need to believe in yourself enough to be able to say, look, my professional opinion is this is the best thing that we can do right now. And that's sometimes as much as you need, because sometimes, you know, internal politics get in the way, especially if it's more, you know, larger businesses with, you know, things have to pass through different teams. It takes ages to get things done. But really, you need to sort of like back yourself in and kind of really stick true. But also, you know, don't let your ego consume you as well. Like, you need to make sure that, you know, it's service-based type of work that we do. So it's like, you're providing a service. You need to, you know, be approachable. You need to be quite, you know, good on your comms in terms of being responsive to emails. You don't want to get an email from a client and wait a week and respond, because that's not providing great service. So there's all sorts of different things that you need to do, but it ultimately comes down to how well you understand the pain points of what a client's going through, and also being able to portray yourself in a positive way to get people to listen. Because it's also how you say things that matter as well, in terms of how people can sort of buy into what you're saying and don't just sort of walk all over you, because that can happen. But, you know, as long as you hit those two things and get a good sort of blend with those, then you should be okay.
And I guess it's interesting with SEO. I've seen it before where sometimes the recommendations aren't things that you can put in place. You need the client to do things. They might need to get another team. It might be that we had it once with a client where there was massive tech changes needed to their websites. We needed to get buy-in, but also there's always that risk of how much do you promise the impact's going to be? Because we don't really know. Like we can estimate and we can forecast, but it's a tricky one. How have you found that side of kind of trying to persuade and get them to buy into what you're saying when it means they've got a lot to do and therefore you're creating them more work?
Yeah, no one likes getting more work dumped on them from an external partner for sure. But I think generally it's about managing the expectations from the start. So it's like, if we know we need to deal with a development team, we'll try and meet them, understand how they work, how they like to communicate, just whatever you can do to make other people's lives easier. Because as soon as you can do that, they will be happy to listen to you. Like the last thing you want is to be able to tell somebody who you've never even met before, do a bunch of these things for me because they're important, and you don't have the context as to other things that they've got going on in their roles. Because, you know, we're not the most important people, and I think we can't assume that we are. So it's kind of having to sort of meet them, get the introductions out the way, and build the rapport. So we've got some clients with dev teams that, you know, thank goodness they are super responsive, but also it's because like we've been able to help them out, help with the education side, and really just be good people. Like people like working with people who are nice to work with. So as long as you can portray that, at least you've put yourself in a much stronger position to get things done. But obviously, if there are loads of things to do, then you have to just figure out a way to be able to say, look, this is the impact versus the effort that's required. And you do really need to prioritize in terms of tickets you create and what have you.
It's interesting. We're talking about SEO, which is all about optimizing from a technical perspective. But actually, so much of your job is about human optimization. It's all relationships.
100%. I think that's the same with anything in life, right? If you know, opportunities, I think, stem from the people that you know. That's why, you know, when people say like your network is your net worth, I think that's really important and it's really true, because it's ultimately down to how you are able to engage with other people and bring them to your side, be friendly with them and really enjoy working together, so that you're able to get things done, implemented if it's on the client side, to get opportunities and hang out with people who are within your industry and what have you. So absolutely, like being able to work together with people is super important.
I love that. Love that.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
Any other questions, Nathan? Things that you want to know? Does SEO sound interesting to you?
Yeah, it's like, it's actually very like useful, because I know when it comes to things like YouTube and algorithms, things like algorithms are very important when it comes to trying to get your content out to the consumers. So
what kind of day-to-day action? So I suppose, because again, this probably still sounds like a bit of a mystery to, like, you explained it beautifully earlier and I get it, but I'm thinking, actually, if I've never done SEO before and it's the first time I've heard about it, what kind of day-to-day work would, especially someone junior starting an SEO, what are they doing? What actions are they taking?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a lot of the practicalities of SEO first come from the theory of understanding, you know, SEO fundamentally stems from information retrieval, which is a sort of concept within computer science of like what certain things, how things move when you sort of input some kind of text, and the sort of structure and methods that these machines have to be able to then give you results. And these things will differ based on the type of platform we're talking about. So like you mentioned, YouTube, for example, that has a separate type of algorithm, and doing SEO on YouTube is different as to what it would be on Google or another search engine or even other platforms. So in terms of the day-to-day of somebody starting out, it's really understanding the theory behind it, kind of reading up on, you know, what things mean, what are, you know, we like to call it keywords in terms of, you know, search terms, and how that, what they mean, what, how these things work in theory. And it's kind of like you need to understand that theory before you can really go in and do tasks like keyword research, for example. Is a very sort of beginner friendly sort of core aspect of SEO that people sort of start with, but you need to understand what these things mean and how they work. And yeah, it's one of those where I think as somebody starting out, it's more about getting your knowledge increased as opposed to just jumping into a bunch of different tasks and SEO activities, if that makes sense.
And I think things like keyword research, actually, the more you can understand human behavior and psychology, the better you're going to be at that. Because although it can be quite seen as quite a junior task, or also we can ask AIs to help us with it, the better strategically we are at keyword research, so understanding the intent behind what someone searched to ensure that we actually optimize the right page for them to land on. That, to me, that's the bit, like I've never been an SEO, but I've talked about it a lot and I know a lot about it, but more from a strategic point of view, because I just love that part of it, of going, oh, because someone wrote this, this is what I really think they want to know, versus if they'd said it this way, I think they want to know something different. And actually that ability to get people to the right place, because that's key. If you land someone in the wrong place, doesn't matter that you optimized and got them there, they're going to be off onto your competitor's website, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I think the strategic part and also critical thinking, I think it's something that you kind of develop over time, but it is something that typically isn't taught to, let's say, a junior starting off in SEO. I think that's something that comes more with experience, in terms of you understand, you know, what SEO is and how you can apply it, but it's also understanding the more strategic aspect. And that's when you start working with clients, because every business is different and you really have to apply critical thinking and being strategic based on the website you're dealing with. No two websites are the same. No two businesses are the same. So it's how you really sort of dive deeper into the context around what may work for this particular use case. And that, with experience, is how you can really develop more sort of strategic thinking, so that now, for example, for me, if I'm on a discovery call and I take a look at a website, I've already got an idea just asking a few questions about, you know, their USP, what they do. I can already think in terms of what's actually going to be the most important things in this kind of context. And that's really something you get with time and more experience.
So when it comes to working with many different clients, how do you collect that data to know exactly how to get their content to the correct audience?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's loads of different things you can do, right? So you can start with looking into what they've currently got, the pages on their website. You can run technical crawls and be able to identify, okay, are search engines able to find, access, and display the right types of pages or the most important pages of this site? If there's any issues there, we can say, look, we need to fix this, because if we don't, your pages won't even show up on search results. So there's no point trying to work on the content side if no one can even see it in the first place. So you can kind of do certain checks initially to identify what's going on with the site at the moment. You can also look into the industry that they're operating in. Who are their competitors? What are they doing? What's their relative performance within particular sectors of the most important things that this business is trying to do? If they're B2C, what are the most important types of products or categories that they're trying to sell within? If it's B2B, professional services, what are those important service areas that you can then sort of benchmark against their competitors to get an idea of where they currently sit? So it's a whole mix of stuff, but yeah, it's one of those where you can kind of set up those processes over time to sort of know, I'm dealing with this website. And once you get a few bits of information from the prospect on a discovery call, for example, then you can kind of go in and do some digging and really be able to get a strategy that's more tailored to them, even without doing so many different like SEO activities, even without jumping into the website and having access. You can already sort of set a framework of like, these are the most important things we need to do to get your website to be more visible.
And it's interesting as well, strategically, if you've got different types of audiences. So you could be, I don't know, I'm going to use Amazon as a big business, that people of all different ages and all different backgrounds buy from Amazon. But actually the way Nathan might search and the way I might search would be different. But also then if you're helping clients internationally, actually understanding, you might say, well, I'm working with this client in the UK and the US, but actually the nuance and the difference culturally, again, of how people search, even if it's the same language, it just, oh, it's where I get excited, because you start unpacking all these different things about human behavior that you can apply to SEO and make sure that actually you're building a strategy for success.
100%. Yeah. And it's all to do with context. So like you're saying there, if it's like an international business, let's say they're selling clothing in the UK and the US, you're not going to have a page selling trousers here as you would in the US, because they would call it pants, right? So it's about understanding not only sort of like cultural differences in terms of language and spellings and all these sorts of things, but it helps you also understand, and you know, this part of SEO, more international SEO, gets a bit more complicated, because you're dealing with ways to be able to signal to search engines to help them identify the pages that are most applicable for people who speak a particular language in a particular locale. So that's something where it gets a bit more complex. But again, with time, it's something that it's great because you can really dive in and understand more about a business and how they work. And for example, in the work that I've done, the amount of websites and businesses that I've worked with or come across, I know so many random things about so many industries now, which is great that I would never have known, but it's kind of, you get it through just being an SEO. And I think part of that is really incredible. Just so many, like, put me into any sort of pub quiz, I may have a chance of, you know, being able to do all right in some random questions and things like that. So
it is so true, isn't it? You pick up the most random things that you're like, I just never knew I'd know about this, and you end up knowing about it quite intimately because you're like, I've had to write content on it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Has there ever been anything you've worked on where in theory it was like meant to work, like when you published it, it was meant to do numbers, but obviously all that research and what's the word? All that research and
strategy, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, that's happened. Not a lot, and I'm not saying that as a brag, but like there has been one particular instance where that has happened, where we've done the right research, we've had the right strategy in place, we've executed it correctly. This was on a site that initially had loads of technical problems, which we did fix, and we did see an impact from that. But then it was more on the content front where things just weren't moving, and we really just weren't sure why. And then when you come across that, and for me it was quite a rare occurrence, but sometimes you can sort of just, you can only do so much until you're just like, say to the client, look, we've tried this and it just isn't working. I think part of being an SEO is you have to be honest with people. You can't just, you know, take people's money to do stuff. If you yourself sort of being in there and doing the work and tracking the performance, if you see that it's not working too well. So that was a time where we said, look, this isn't working. You're probably better off, you know, investing in paid if you just want to get that traffic in there. Because for whatever reason, certain pages either aren't being indexed or they're just not moving at all. So, you know, it's a rarity, but when that does happen, you do have to be honest. And I think that's part of being the job. It's not always going to be 100% great, you know, incredible success, incredible growth. It's not what happens. You know, growth isn't linear. A lot of businesses like to think of growth as very linear. Let's say a business has done, you know, 200% increase in sales 1 year. They'll now say, okay, next year we're going to do that again, 200% increase. It's not linear. Like, these things don't work that way in practice as they do in theory sometimes. And it's just part of, you know, that's just sometimes how it is. I can't really explain it even to this day. I don't really understand why that particular case went wrong, but we had to say this is what's happened and move on.
Yeah. You also, I guess when you're doing your research, you can look at what competitors have done historically, but you don't know what the competitor's currently doing or about to do. So you could have this brilliant strategy and then they hit at the same time doing the same kind of strategy. And actually, you just have to kind of take that as it happens and see how you can adapt and... yeah, see what Google's going to favor and the other search engines, because as much as you know how SEO works, you also don't 100% know exactly what's going to react. It is a lot of test and learn still.
Yeah, that's why I say to people, it's like, look, SEO isn't something that you can guarantee results to people. Anyone who's going to guarantee your results from SEO is lying, because you can't do that. It doesn't work in practice. And I think that's, again, like what we're saying, it's, you know, you can only know so much in terms of how things should work, but it's not to say that it's going to work 100% of the time. And you can't say that it will, because that's impossible to know. So, but that's also the kind of beauty of it, I suppose, in a way, because things change, you always need to adapt in some way. So it's kind of always giving you an option or new things to think about. So if Google has launched new types of products on the search engine results pages or any sort of things that come out in documentation, that you can sort of take and look and say, oh, this is something new. This is something that we can try and experiment with to see what happens. And that's sort of part of being an SEO, is never being complacent, to always assume that there's other businesses who are also trying to optimize their sites. And if even if you're ranking number one today, that doesn't mean you're going to rank number one tomorrow or next week or next month. So
You also end up having different competitors, don't you? They're not always your traditional, like if you were two shops next to each other and you both sold the same thing, you'd know you were a competitor. But actually, there's a lot of media sites, publishing sites that are trying to rank for the same things as you, but for different reasons. They want people to just read the content. They want people to see the advertising on their site, etc. Whereas you're there trying to sell the thing. And actually, sometimes you're chasing the same keywords. So there's different intents there as well. So it's, oh, I don't know. I love SEO. I'm biased.
We all love SEO.
Yeah. Hopefully our audience are going to love SEO after today. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's just, yeah, fantastic. How do you think with the rise of the generative AI tools, people are starting to turn to these for questions that they might have asked Google previously? Do you have any predictions or thoughts on that? Any working ideas that you're starting to look at to think about what that means for client strategies?
Yeah, the way that it is right now is what I'm seeing is that optimizing your site is still going to be very important in terms of LLMs being able to understand your business and your website and what you offer. So the big thing at the moment with LLMs, for example, is that they can't render JavaScript. And what that means is that for any content you've got on your website, you want that content to be accessible within the raw HTML of the page. Because if it isn't, then these AI platforms aren't going to be able to see your content. So that's going to be a big blocker if you're trying to be visible for LLMs. Something else is sort of brand mention. So there's lots of listicle type of blogs that people are posting out, which tends to be the sort of one of the sources that something like ChatGPT would use to reference a website when you've made a search. So at this moment in time, I don't really think there's too many things that you really would do different if you're optimizing your website from a traditional SEO perspective as you would to, let's say, I want to optimize for AI search and AI platforms. I don't really think there's really any difference at this moment in time.
Yeah, watch this space. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? It is. And to just watch the human behavior shifts on what we use it for, and but also what Google does to change, because obviously we're already integrating AI into the Google search results. So will you need ChatGPT or will all your answers come from Google? We just don't know, do we?
Well, that's the thing. And that's why it's like we have to see what happens. But even though ChatGPT undoubtedly has had some of the most insane spike in usage of any type of website in the world for probably ever, Google still has about 373 times more traffic than ChatGPT does. Mm. So if people think Google is dying, it's not. Like, yeah. Google is still a behemoth, yeah. Right? And even though platforms like ChatGPT are used a lot more, we'll see how that continues in terms of, like we're saying, consumer behavior. How are people utilizing these technologies in their day-to-day lives? At this moment in time, Google really isn't going anywhere. And it has all the prior knowledge and, you know, the established history. It has all our data that it has collected for the past 20 years. So it knows what it's doing. And I don't doubt, you know, Google is working hard to get something to rival those types of experiences within Google.
Yeah. Oh, it's an interesting time. Any final questions, or are you sold on being an SEO?
To other SEOs, what are your top tips when it comes to trying to get websites to rank on Google?
That's a good question, because nowadays there's so many things. I think fundamentally you need to have a website that has pages which are targeting the correct types of terms in a unique way. So like, don't have multiple pages on your site trying to achieve the same purpose, because then all of them are going to essentially dilute the visibility that you could get. But when it comes to picking keywords, obviously there's keyword research tools that you can use. You can also take a look at your pages through something like Google Search Console, have a look at what types of queries are visible for them, and then just think in terms of, okay, this query has lots of impressions, people are searching for me, but I'm not ranking as well, but it's still something relevant for that page. So you can pick that. And it's also looking into the SERP. So type in those keywords, see what the results are showing. You see who's ranking at the top, they're ranking at the top for a reason. So you can sort of retroactively try and identify why those pages are ranking. Do they have lots more backlinks than your page at the moment? Are they structuring their content in a certain way that matches more what a user would look for? So say, for example, if it's a commercial search of, you know, buying some sneakers and you see the pages at the top, they're most likely going to find, you know, have a way for you to buy those sneakers. They're not going to waste time with lots of other irrelevant types of content. So really think about the intent of why somebody would want to make that search and what they're expecting to see from a search result. Because Google has ways of understanding the intent behind of a search. And sometimes intents change. So you also just need to sort of keep updated with that. But I think that may have been more than three, but hopefully that wasn't confusing.
No, I love that. I love that. Any final thoughts? No,
I think that's it.
I think that's it. I guess my final question to wrap us up, imagine we could invite 17-year-old Itamar to the table right now. What's your bit of advice to him on the journey he's about to go on?
That's a good question. I think just stay curious. I think that's the main thing. Like I would say, look, like especially nowadays, things are changing a lot more frequently now than when I was starting out. And you really do have to just keep a pulse on what's happening and read as much as you can, experiment as much as you can, because it's such an exciting time now for anyone working in digital. And yeah, you really do need to have that sort of drive and the mentality to really want to find out things and experiment and do well. That's how you end up doing well. You just have to go get it.
Love that. I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for joining us, Itamar. You have so much knowledge to share, and I reckon we've got some new SEOs in our audience today. And I'm sure they're going to come and listen to your podcast as well. So we will link that in the show notes as well, which would be fantastic. Nathan, you've been a fantastic co-host. I hope you've learned a lot as well. Yeah. And can go and maybe start doing some keyword research and seeing what you might be able to optimize for. But thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on a future episode of Behind the Future.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.